Welcome to the third of the Queer History Podcast's media reviews. We'll be taking a look at the 2015 movie Carol this week in order to explore one of the few movies about queer women that went mainstream. Quick business announcements, per usual. Laura and I have spent the bulk of this past year bringing some of queer history into the present, and we will continue to do so into 2017. If you'd like to support us, feel free to head over to the Queer History Patreon, linked in the Tumblr description of this episode. Likewise, you're welcome to bounce over to our one-time donations page. Likes and reblogs of the episode post on Tumblr are also appreciated, and if you want to request a media review or suggest a topic for a queer history article, feel free to send us an ask or email us at queerhistorypatreon@gmail.com. Now, with the end of the year coming up on us, I wanted to work with some queer media that, at the least, resolved itself with a happy-ish ending. It's been a hard year for everyone, myself included, but it's important to take the time now to look at all of our broken bits and find ways that we can grow anew. Such is the case for Therese Bellavette. While working for a high-end department store, she encounters Carol Ayres, sparking an attraction that simmers over the course of 118 minutes. The original story of these two women was written by Patricia Highsmith in a novel titled The Price of Salt, and is the product of a lightning inspiration that struck when Highsmith saw a woman in a gold coat shopping at a department store. Several reviews of the 2015 movie cite small differences between the product and its source material, though the conversation at the heart of the novel, along with its various tensions, remains intact. Carol and Therese are both complex women living lives full of obstacles that prevent them from embracing themselves not only sexually, but as independent individuals. It is not through each other that these obstacles are overcome, but rather with one another. There is a brokenness about both women, in fact, that binds them as closely as their affection. This theme of brokenness carries throughout the film and plays alongside conversations about misogyny and female agency. A theme, mind, can be expressed in multiple ways, dialogue, of course, but also in costuming or in the shots a movie sets up. The theme of misogyny is shown to hamper the agency and spirit of the two female leads. Carol, for example, must fight her soon-to-be ex-husband, Harge, not only for custody of her daughter, but for her own independence. Her confidant and ex-lover, Abby, hits this theme square on the head when Harge comes to look for Carol at her house. She addresses his controlling nature, spitting out, "You made damn sure that her only point of reference was you." While the bulk of Carol's married life with Harge never plays out on screen, viewers are invited to take this line and inspect the interactions between Harge and Carol that are seen. The first that comes to mind appears just under halfway through the movie, when Harge attempts to drag Carol out of her house so that she can attend Christmas with his parents. This doesn't go over well. Carol, who is already emotionally distraught by the upheaval of her Christmas with her daughter, physically refuses to cooperate with Harge. Cate Blanchett is an actress who can radiate confidence with ease. In this scene, however, she seems to shrink, not quite cowering as Harge grasps her wrists, but certainly reflecting a fear that many women, I'd argue, are pretty familiar with. The utter fury Harge displays at her uncooperative nature is terrifying. He reverts to a toddler when Carol doesn't submit to his demands. Carol herself states this when he applies for full custody of her daughter, saying, "If he can't have me, then I can't have her." Therese is not free of this misogynistic gaze either, as she endures romantic advances from a sort of boyfriend, Richard, and writer-slash-jerk philosopher, Danny. These men approach Therese from two different angles, but both feel presumptive, not only of her sexuality, but also of her agency. Danny, after inviting Therese into his office for dinner, expects her to welcome his advances despite her sort of kind of attachment to Richard. His voice leans desperate as Therese leaves the scene, as well as confusedly persistent. He keeps asking for them to meet up again, but Therese never fully responds. Likewise, boyfriend Richard insists on planning out the life he and Therese are supposed to live, insisting that Therese go to France with him, stop seeing Carol, marry him, just cooperate with him. His shortening of her name down to Terry on several occasions can also be seen as an attempt to control or diminish Therese as a person. Thankfully, Therese prevails through these attempts, though Richard's anger at her enactment of autonomy and firm belief that she'll return to him is, again, familiar and rather self-important. If it's not obvious, I didn't like the male characters in this film, though I don't really think I'm supposed to, but rarely have I ever been so annoyed by them. Luckily, both Carol and Therese find ways throughout the film to enact their own agency, despite the grubby hands of the men in their lives. This is evident in their use of dialogue and in their mutual character arcs, but it's also explored through the colors associated with both characters. Carol and Therese both have staple colors in the film that carry with them through their development. Carol, to begin, is most frequently seen in the color red. It can be present in her hat, her ascot, her lipstick, her nail polish, somewhere, but it's usually there. The color of red, most often tied with gold, seems to appear most vibrantly in Carol's highest moments of confidence. Not only is this palette reflected in her costuming, but it can be seen in the presidential suite that she and Therese occupy while on their road trip, and also in the luggage she carries and in the lighting the film casts her in. Even when she gives up custody of her daughter to Harge, she is still wearing gold. However, Therese's color, blue, makes an appearance in her hat. This presentation of Carol through the colors of her clothing allows viewers to witness her growth as a character, but it also reveals where her strength lies. She is red and gold at her core, and when she is in most control of herself. Therese's color of blue is arguably more reflective of her youth as a character, or even of her softness or malleability. She states early on in the story that she doesn't always know what she wants, and then later on that she has a difficult time telling the people in her life no. Therese's agency is a complicated matter generally. However, it is her final conversation with Carol that really establishes how she has grown from the plus one Richard made her early on in the movie. The tragic conversation is painful as hell, but Therese has developed this ability to say no and to make a path for herself. What perhaps is notable, though, still in the vein of costuming, is the red purse she carries in this scene, a mark of Carol's, much like Carol's blue hat is a mark of her. Finally, there's also the account of the color green throughout the movie. As has been mentioned in previous discussions of queer coding throughout history, green carnations were often used to indicate whether or not a man was interested in other men. Therese's color of blue becomes interspersed with a vibrant green as the movie progresses. She's often cast in it during linchpin scenes, or when the movie is about to experience great change. The tunnel Therese and Carol drive through in the first act of the movie is cast in green. The detective's room is a bright, ugly green. Therese's walls when she comes home from the Midwest are being painted green. Green, while being a marker of queerness, is also the color of growth, and its poignancy throughout the movie should not be ignored. This jigsaw puzzling of the women's primary colors, along with the colors used for coding, reflects the brokenness that both women in the movie seem to bear. Both women must break in order to embrace themselves and their lifestyles. They both bear an intense loneliness when the movie begins, that they must overcome, both independently and together. It's heartbreaking to connect with these characters as they struggle through their development, because their glass-shattered edges aren't brushed under the rug. The people who witness the relationship between Therese and Carol likely see their attraction as a result of their brokenness, but not in the way that the true theme of the movie expresses. The beauty in brokenness and the strength it takes to grow from it is evident not only in the characters' individual agency, but in their coming together on eventually equal footing. I'm going to be honest, I didn't expect to like this film as much as I did. I'm not sure what I was expecting, but this film hit me square in the chest with, again, the theme of brokenness and recovery. It appealed to me on an aesthetic level, but the story at its core and the strength and complex nature of these women made it really an excellent movie to watch. I can understand why it received so much critical attention, and I found myself fonder of the movie than I ever expected. The presentation of queerness throughout the piece, from the colors to the interactions between Carol and Therese, seems realistically based while also being respectful, and it was gratifying to watch the two of them transcend all of the obstacles that had been with them throughout their lives. Thank you for listening, everyone. I hope you have a lovely holiday, whichever one it is you celebrate. If you're looking for a movie to watch, Carol is one that will leave you with the warm golden fuzzies, but fuzzies that feel well-earned. The movie is rated R for silly reasons like cigarettes and sex, of course, but I encourage you to watch it if you have the interest and the time. Thank you again for listening, folks. Take care of yourselves, be well, and remember, history and media is queerer than you think.